There are some new fears over Zika this morning.
The outbreak that is now being called a global health emergency.
There's no vaccine and no specific antiviral medication.
Gone from Asia, Africa, to South America.
And here in the U.S., with at least 50 cases now confirmed, there is...
A lot of fear has been stirred up over the Zika virus in the last few months. But by some measures, the Zika virus is relatively tame.
This isn't like Ebola virus or some other things that have extremely high mortality.
So just how dangerous is the Zika virus?
Many people have no symptoms at all.
But if you get the infection and you're pregnant, it can lead to miscarriages and damage to the developing brain.
What's important for you to know about this virus?
Any pregnant woman who's had travel to areas that are affected by Zika virus and symptoms, even if they are very, very mild, should seek attention by an obstetrician gynecologist.
We'll find out today from two UW Medicine experts.
This is the UW Medicine Pulse with Marty Reamer. Real-world stories of the discoveries being made at UW Medicine and the impact they're having on people here in the Pacific Northwest and around the world.
This summer, Brazil will host the 2016 Summer Olympic Games. Thousands of athletes and spectators from around the globe will converge on Rio de Janeiro. And that has world health officials concerned. Because Brazil is currently a hot zone for the Zika virus.
Well, Zika virus belongs to a group of viruses that are transmitted by mosquitoes.
Here in the Pacific Northwest, mosquitoes are, for the most part, a nuisance, a summertime nuisance. In other parts of the world, however, like the tropics, mosquitoes are responsible for spreading some nasty disease. According to Dr. Robert Coombs, medical director of the virology clinic at UW Medical Center Roosevelt, in the case of the Zika virus, it's one breed of mosquito in particular, the Asian tiger mosquito. Or at least that's what they used to be called. Now they're simply the tiger mosquito, because thanks to some old junk, some tires and vehicles that were left behind after World War II, they've managed to migrate from Asia to Africa, the Pacific Islands, and now the Americas, taking the Zika virus and its cousins dengue fever and chikungunya right along with them.
It has an interesting history because Zika virus sort of represents, I think, this culmination of changes in globalization, urbanization, and lack of public health measures or loss of public health measures to control mosquito vectors. This whole process has been going on more or less since about the time of the Second World War, when the Asian tiger mosquito started to spread from Southeast Asia because of standing water issues that resulted from, you know, old military vehicles and the refuse after the Second World War, and spread across the South Pacific, and actually came into southern United States in old rubber tires that were being recycled, because they hold water, and as mm-hmm. you know, if you've ever filled a tire up with water, you can't get the water out of it.
Right.
So they breed in that. This is purely, for the most part, transmission from human to human by the mosquito. In other words, the mosquito bites an infected individual, picks up the virus replicates in the mosquito bites another human being, and injects it along with the mosquito's saliva.
There is some evidence now suggesting the Zika virus can be transmitted sexually. The CDC recommends that men who have traveled to a Zika-endemic area should consider using condoms, especially if their partners are pregnant, for the duration of the pregnancy. But still, the primary means of transmission is this mosquito, the tiger mosquito. In fact, with no vaccine on the horizon, battling the mosquito is right now the most effective way of battling Zika.
The obvious way to block it is to block the contact between the mosquito and an infected person. And in environments where you don't have air conditioning, you don't have window screens, you've got a lot of standing water close to where people are, you can see how that transmission mm-hmm. occurs. The viremic period, the period when there's virus in the blood, is very short. It's only probably a few days to a week. But if the individual is, you know, in crowded environments where there are lots of mosquitoes and there's lots of there are a lot of sick people, then the virus gets transmitted very mm-hmm. easily.
Of those that do get infected with the Zika virus, a full 80% show no symptoms at all. And for the 1 in 5 who do?
Usually fever and skin rash and muscle pain and some joint pain. One of the things also seen with Zika, they get red eyes or conjunctivitis. But other than that, not much. Much milder than chikungunya, for example, or dengue.
So routine are Zika symptoms that the illness might have been ignored altogether, were it not for a highly troubling correlation. Coinciding with this recent Zika outbreak in Brazil was a significant increase in the number of babies born with a birth defect known as microcephaly. They were born with an abnormally small head. And according to Christina Adams Waldorf, a UW Medicine obstetrician-gynecologist, the prognosis for these babies born with microcephaly,
it's very poor. Some of those infants will die.
And others will be left severely disabled.
So as a mother, an OBGYN, and a scientist, seeing these cases of microcephaly was absolutely devastating. And knowing that we have the tools here to make a real impact on this disease, I knew that we had to pull a team together.
As for this connection between Zika and microcephaly, there's still a lot that's not known. Some of the most fundamental questions we still don't have answers for.
First of all, it has not yet been established that there is a cause and effect between Zika virus and these cases of microcephaly. It's not a stretch to say that viruses can cause microcephaly. We know that cytomegalovirus, rubella virus, and a number of other viruses can cause microcephaly, so it's not necessarily a stretch. However, microcephaly is not something that we've seen reported with dengue fever, which is a closely related flavivirus, and it may be something unique to Zika virus that is enabling it to transfer in a more efficient way to the fetal brain and cause brain injury. We just don't know. We have so much to learn. We, like other scientists around the United States, are assembling a team to study Zika virus. At the University of Washington, we are well poised to study Zika virus. We have experts in obstetrics, infectious disease, radiology, neuroscience, and therapeutics. We want to understand the first, whether Zika virus does in fact cause fetal brain injury, the timing of infection to fetal brain inflammation, and finally whether we can come up with a therapeutic that can minimize fetal brain injury or prevent it altogether.
Despite the many unanswered questions, the medical community and governments in Central and South America, who are expected to be hardest hit by this outbreak, are choosing to err on the side of extreme caution.
The government of El Salvador has asked women to not become pregnant until 2018. That's unheard of. These are also countries in very low resource settings where many women, they don't have access to contraception. Mm-hmm. They can't control the size of their families. They're at risk for becoming infected and developing a fetus with possibly a devastating brain injury that they can't care for, that they don't have access to neuropediatricians.
Avoid getting pregnant if you live in one of the hot zones, and if you don't?
If it were my sister or my patient, I would strongly recommend to not travel to countries with known or even suspected Zika cases in these areas while you are pregnant. It's not worth it. Any pregnant woman who's had travel to areas that are affected by Zika virus and symptoms, even if they are very, very mild, should seek attention by an obstetrician-gynecologist. We have published guidelines in place for when to initiate testing, and we would contact the CDC in order to test these cases.
And again, the concern is that this is going to spread.
And that's the major concern they have about the upcoming Olympics, is that people will travel. Susceptible people will travel from other parts of the world to Brazil, get infected, and bring it back.
I think it's rapidly becoming clear that this is a public health emergency with global implications. The number of people that are traveling to and from these countries with air travel, the prevalence of mosquitoes year-round and seasonally in a number of other countries puts much of the world at risk.
There's no question that we would anticipate introduction of infected of the virus into the United States, southern United States, where the mosquito vector is here. But our conditions are different. We have screens, we have air conditioning, so we don't anticipate the same type of epidemic here that we see in Brazil.
I think it will be several years until we have a vaccine in place, and we need to do something now for the pregnant women in Brazil, South America, Central America, and these countries. I think the National Institutes of Health are responding as we speak to organize funding dedicated towards Zika virus.
Find out the latest on the Zika virus, and in particular what UW Medicine is doing on the research front, visit our website, uwmedicine.org/pulse. And while you're there, you can also subscribe to this podcast on iTunes so that you get every episode delivered to your phone or tablet for free as soon as they are released. I want to send out a special thanks to Dr. Robert Coombs and Dr. Christina Adams-Waldorf for participating in today's show. UW Medicine Pulse is produced by Tina Knoll, production assistance from Aaron Gervais. I'm Marty Reamer. Thanks for listening.